What we've decided to talk about today are the traits, the moral, excellent moral traits of the muttaqin, or the pious, using selections from a sermon in Nahjulbalagha. According to some of the Nahjulbalaghas, it's sermon number 193, where the Imam describes one of his companions, a righteous companion, a man named Hammam. He describes the traits of the muttaqin to the extent that the man, his request was that it be as if I can see them, to that extent. Now what we're trying to do is that in preparation for the return of the Imam of our time, and knowing that we are the soldiers, and inshallah, we will witness the return, we are taught by ulama that the more we work on our spiritual side before the Imam returns, the more we will benefit by the presence of the Imam. More than that, we can hasten his reappearance through that process of self-development. So in order to be those elite soldiers of the Imam of our time, we have no choice but to take these words of the Imam very seriously and try and see how they apply to us today, in this time, and how we can acquire these wonderful traits. The one that I've decided to use today, this is a series of lectures, it's been going on in other series, we've come to this line. وَغَضُّوا أَبْصَارَهُمْ عَمَّا حَرَمَ اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِمْ. They lower their eyes from that which Allah has forbidden for them. They lower their eyes from that which Allah has forbidden for them. We want to not only see this trait, use this trait, but then see practically how can I acquire this trait. And this is a serious one and a difficult one, especially living here in the West, but it is essential for our spiritual perfection. We have no other choice but to adopt these traits and to take them seriously. But I will warn you, it's different than what they say in the West. So for us to adopt these traits, we must have complete confidence in Islam, be proud to be Muslims, be willing to be different than everybody else on the face of the earth. So now, you know, in the West they tell you, if you got it, then flaunt it. If you've got it, then flaunt it. If you're gorgeous, you look good, then show it off, strut yourself. That's what they say in the West. Or for men, that's for women, so women are encouraged to do that, whereas the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt is that zakatul jamal al-afraf. The zakat of being beautiful is that you are chaste, direct in opposition of what is happening on the outside, and also somewhat against our natural inclinations. We'll talk about this a bit more later. But it is natural, and we encourage this, that women want to dress up and to be beautiful. That's natural. We don't think that we as human beings were broken. Allah made us and we're broken. We're fighting against our nafs in that way. No, we're simply channeling those desires that Allah put in us. For men, this discussion is even more important. It's important for ladies also. But for men, this discussion is very important. If we want to be those soldiers of the Imam, one major sin that we have to avoid is what they call zina of the eyes. Zina of the eyes. And if you just look at the way that you are, you and I as brothers, the way that we're made is to be naturally attracted towards looking at the opposite sex. It's there for women also, but I don't think women can comprehend, not being men, how natural it is to look, how much a man wants to, how much he must fight against himself if he chooses to be chaste and to practice according to the way of Islam. It's not easy. It's not easy. So, what I find interesting is that this is surah number 24 and verse number 30 and 31. Allah first speaks to the believing men. He says, قُلْ لِلْمُؤْمِنِينَ, and he tells them to lower their eyes. The next verse he says, قُلْ لِلْمُؤْمِنَاتِ. So, is there a definite reason behind that? There's a definite, Allah is a reason. Is it definitely the reason that I think? I'm not sure. But it seems to me that because there is more of a tendency with men, we have to be told these things more than others. And it's all around us. You look at the movies that are around us, you look at the billboards, you look at magazines, radio, television, it's like shayateen are all over the place. And it's difficult to be those soldiers of Imam and say, although I have the ability, although it's encouraged, although people think it's fun, as a Muslim, I refrain. And I don't want to be like that. And I am proud of these values that I have. As I like to say, we're not old-fashioned, we're old-school. These are our values. We like these values. We embrace these values. And they will help us get success in this world and the hereafter. We'll get to that though, inshallah. Hadith now. Because it's the month of Ramadan, and we need the extra encouragement, words of the Ahlul Bayt, to help us engage in this war. Which again is something that both men and women have to be careful about, especially our brothers. This is from the Prophet of Allah Muhammad, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. He says, لِكُلِّ عُضْوٍ مِنْ أَبْنَ آدَمْ حَذٌ مِنَ الزِّنَا. For every limb, for every part of our body, there is a share of zina, a taste of zina, a way that the body enjoys this, for every limb of the body. So he says, فَالْعَيْن, when it comes to the eyes, فَزِنَاهُ another. The zina of the eyes is that haram looking, that inappropriate looking, that thing that comes so naturally, the thing that you have to stop yourself, you have to do jihad with yourself in order to stop. Right? He says, he continues, he says that with the tongue, its zina is al-kalam, speaking, flirting, being extra friendly, compliments. I was speaking to one of the brothers, and I was explaining that somehow when you're in the presence of sisters, you just feel like Eddie Murphy, you know, you're just funnier, you can make jokes. I mean, what is it about that? That men and women, when they're together, for guys especially, but for girls also, they have to be careful about this whole, you know, maintaining the bounds. We do believe there is a hijab, and not only the hijab, which is the physical hijab, but our behavior, and behaving in a way which we consider appropriate and honorable. We have verses of Quran which talk about talking to the wives of the Prophet, right? Surah Ahzab, talking to the wives of the Prophet, that how you should speak to non-mahrams, speaking in a firm way, not in a way that's real friendly and easy, you know. For sisters, a lot of times they do it innocently, because they don't know how the male mind works. But I'll tell you, sisters, we men are very simple. As soon as you say, you know, make some nice comments and stuff, you're just being friendly, you're not meaning anything. I start thinking, oh wow, she likes me. It's difficult for us. So, but when you speak in a firm and appropriate way, professional friendly, right, but we're not overly friendly, that helps everybody. We try not to distract one another from Allah. Try not to distract one another from Allah. So sometimes another thing that happens is, you know, as we're saying, kalam is the zina of the tongue. Sometimes with emails, and chatting back and forth. And I'm not going to say all of that's haram either. What is halal? What is haram? We'll go over that. But there is a certain stage when yes, it is haram. Talking in a way that no, we shouldn't be. We're not mahrams. Sometimes what that shaitan does to us, he fools us. You know, she's just like my sister. You know, he's a brother to me. We're just crying. We're sharing, not crying. We're sharing feelings. We're talking to one another. We're consoling one another. We're getting through these difficult times. Brothers and sisters, you're not brothers and sisters. And I tell you right now, I mean, she has other people, you know, cousins also aren't mahrams. You know, he's my cousin, but really he's like my brother. No, there's a reason why your cousin's not your brother. Your cousin's not your brother. Don't talk to him like his brother. You got other people. You got mahrams. Talk to them. Don't. Not to them. So shaitan comes and says, oh, it doesn't mean anything. I don't feel anything. Brothers and sisters, if when you talk to a non-mahram, right, this is what Ulama Akhlaq said, if you see a young woman, she's dressed up, she looks good, and you don't feel anything, go see a doctor. What's wrong with you? You don't like talking to, you're not attracted to the opposite sex? We don't believe, we're not homosexual. We're, they're all the same. No, they're not all the same. So the attraction between the sexes is something natural. We celebrate that. We think that's a good thing. But at the same time, we're not supposed to distract one another from God. And it even happens sometimes when you're doing Islamic work. Because the thing is that you're supposed to be pleasant and friendly, interacting. It's not that all of these things are haram. There's You know, there's rules in law. We don't have time to go over that right now, but maybe in the question and answer session. What is Allah? What is a halal? So now when we're interacting, it's natural to become friends. That's a nice person. You know, another thing I find, that for us as Muslims, it's easy for us to fall in love. Perhaps because we're not selfish. Part of it's because we're chaste and we're not as free with the opposite sex. But part, so easily. We become friends, we like one another, and then, you know, lines are crossed. We can make mistakes. So, that flirting, that chatting, emails, all these things. Then he says that the ears, its zina is listening and enjoying. Zina of the ears, that listening. The zina of the hands is touching. It doesn't mean anything. We're shaking hands. It's a... You're not supposed to shake hands. Islamically, that's not allowed. You know, some Muslims, they get to a stage where they feel like there's nothing they can do. They know it's haram. There's nothing they can do. It's a job interview. First time going. Only get one chance to make a first impression, so I go in. Astaghfirullah. I do it anyway. I have to be confident enough. Allah is my provider. I can be different. I can be a Muslim. You know, this is one of the things that I really admire about our sisters. You know, normally when you have a talk, at least for me as a mubaligh, we have a talk and we're going to go and address the sisters. The first thing the organizers sometimes will tell you, go talk to the sisters about hijab. Tell the sisters to wear hijab. Hijab this, hijab that, hijab. Do you know how tough it is to wear the hijab? You know how brave you have to be? Imagine if you had to go into work, into a job interview. You were wearing an imama. Because you can get away with it if you're Muslim, you know. Just trim your beard down a little bit, you know, maybe hide your Dhul-Fikar chain. Maybe have a little ring on your hand. But it's not the flag of Islam. Every accusation, I have no Muslim sisters. They say that when I started wearing the hijab, I would go out. People would start talking, oh, it's America. Do you speak English? Sister, she's graduated. Then I said, so it's something that sisters do effortlessly. But it requires a lot of bravery. But what we're saying is that that's not only it. It is not only that hijab. It's other things, too. It's that behavior. It's that not looking in a way which we consider inappropriate. Now, To give me a little bit of encouragement to adopt these principles, to say that, okay, tell me what the rules and laws are in Islam for looking, for talking, and these things. Then give me the encouragement so that I adopt these principles. Let's talk a little bit about what happens if you don't in this world. You know, because obviously there's punishment in the hereafter. For inappropriate looking, we have hadith that say that they will take basically two nails of fire. Whoever, hadith is like this, whoever fills his eyes with haram, Allah will take two nails of fire, be paraphrasing, and put them in that person's eye. It says, except if he makes tawbah. So this is serious in Islam. And it causes problems. Real problems. What does it do to your marriage? What does it do to you if you're not married? Let me just explain a principle, hadith now. The Prophet of Allah was talking to a man named Ibn Mas'ud. And he told him, he said, beware of the intoxication of sin. That sin, like alcohol, intoxicates. You know, one thing that's different about us, when we explain about self-development in Islam, we tell people to work on themselves, we don't tell them that it's going to all be easy. We don't tell them that if you want to sin, that sins are horrible. No, sometimes sins can be delicious. Sins can be delicious. For instance, I mean, because if Allah made it that every time we committed a sin, a thunderbolt will come down from heaven, you know. I see my friend, he doesn't wake up for Fajr, and a lightning bolt comes, you know, he's ashes. I'll make Salatul Layla. Allah doesn't do that. Sins are delicious. The sin of backbiting. I mean, in the Quran, it's described that you're eating the flesh of your dead brother. But from a practical point of view, I mean, people are like backbiting. Well, you have some, it's delicious. People are biting one another. You don't see people stopping one another always. Right? Backbiting. But this, in the Quran, it's like your brother's dead. You're eating. And you wouldn't think picking up, you know, a bit of, you know, his cadaver, you know, this one, how would you act? But when it comes to backbiting, how seriously do we take backbiting? So what happens, these things are sweet, delicious. You know something else? Sometimes sin is beneficial. Before you start saying that this shaykh is just completely crazy. I have a Quran. Surah 2 and verse number 219. Talking about two clear, obvious, open sins in Islam. One of them is drinking. You know that if you have an Islamic state, we will lash drinkers. You guys haven't seen lashings. I've seen, it's something terrible to see what a lashing is really like. We'll lash them. So drinking, which is obviously clearly forbidden in Islam, gambling. They're trying a move now to get Muslims to gamble. Get everybody to gamble. Make it a sport. You know, for us, we say that not only can you not gamble, even instruments of gambling cannot be used when you're not gambling. I want to play cards and make a house of cards. Are those instruments of gambling? Yes. Is it allowed to make a house of cards with them? No. Even instruments of gambling are forbidden in Islam. So gambling, 100% haram. Alcohol, 100% haram. Now what does the ayat of Quran say about these two open sins? فِيهِمَا إِثْمٌ كَبِيرٌ وَمَنَافِعُ لِلنَّاسِ. In them is great sin and benefits for the people. So sins, we're saying, are delicious, sometimes even beneficial. More than that, as this hadith said, intoxicating. People get addicted to sin. It feels so good, it tastes so good. We want to beware of getting a high off of committing sins. But you can. Commit a sin, right? We have some hadith that being happy about a sin is worse than committing that sin. We have to hate the sin, even if I'm making a mistake and I commit the sin. I have to hate it. I have to want to fight back against it. So even to enjoy it, to think, you know, we say, you know, astaghfirullah, rabbi atubu alayhi, but inside ourselves, you know, alhamdulillah, what tawfiq, what a great sin. We have a hadith. If we do that, we're making fun of ourselves. We have to feel regret when we commit a sin and when we slip. Okay, so that's what we're... But what happens to you, though, about this particular sin? Because those are, for all sins, they can be intoxicated. What happens when it comes to the sin of looking inappropriately? One of the things that happens, and this can happen even if you're married. Well, I'm married, it's okay, I look, but it's, you know, there was a man, he used to... Whenever a woman would come in, apparently in the Islamic Republic, a woman would come in, if she was beautiful, she would say, Alhamdulillah. If you look at her, Alhamdulillah. And if she was ugly, he would say, Astaghfirullah. He would turn his face. So he would be doing that, you know, Alhamdulillah. Then he would, Astaghfirullah. So somebody noticed he was doing that, so then he would say, Astaghfirullah, he would turn away. So the person was watching him, he waited till he turned away, he said, Astaghfirullah, he turned away. He said, you just missed an Alhamdulillah. So sometimes we, it's a sport, you know, looking, or I'm not conscious about it, I'm seeing these things, you know. But what happens to you if you do that? What effect does it have on your iman? How does it destroy you? One of the things is that overexposure, let's talk about the burn, what you burn hell, okay, what about this world? In this world, overexposure deadens the senses. In America, we have places where they have nudist beaches. And people who've gone to those nudist beaches say that what happens is after 10 minutes, it's just like an arm or a leg. Overexposure deadens the senses. So one of those things that happens to people who are not careful about what they look, not careful about looking at pornography, God forbid, none of us will be doing that. But even when it comes to some of the movies that are out there, it doesn't mean that all movies are haram. I even asked the Office of Ayatollah Khamenei, this is a movie, one, there's a bad scene in it. You can fast forward the movie, but you can still rent the movie and watch it. So it's okay to see. But sometimes there's some actress in there, and I'm looking at her with lust or fearful, and said, nothing's bad happening. Still, that's not allowed. We've got to be careful about our eyes. What happens to us? That overexposure deadens the senses. So, you'll be in a situation where a person will be married, but they're not careful with their eyes. After a while, their wife's not beautiful for them anymore. And then you wonder, why is it their marriage is going through problems and issues? You're not careful about your eyes, brother. So, if I'm not careful, then My wife doesn't become attractive. What happens in the Western world, because they also are not following this principle of the optimal mate, they start trying other women to get a buzz. After a while, if they keep indulging themselves, women aren't attractive. Men. Then they try men, and after a while, men aren't attractive. Children. Children aren't attractive. Animals, cats and dogs. And it just gets worse and worse and worse. In this world, let alone the hereafter, we have to be real careful about this, brothers and sisters. This is a very, very serious issue. So now, okay, I've heard about this. Sheikh, you've been shouting at us and screaming at us. Now, I want you to hear, how do I overcome this? Practically, I want to be a soldier of the Imam. I realize that I have to have chastity in my life. There has to be a difference with how I deal with the members of the Ahlul Bayt, of the opposite sex. I'm respectful of my dealings, I'm friendly, I'm cooperative. But at the same time, the difference has to be there. How do I overcome this attraction towards the haram? Because it's so prevalent in the society. Now I'm going to explain another trait. And this one is against, again, what is convention in the West. Against what's convention in the West. So brace yourselves. We're Muslims, we're different, and we're proud to be different. I personally will never apologize for being a Muslim. I converted to the Shia faith. I was born Muslim, alhamdulillah, but I converted to the Shia faith. And there's no way on earth I'm going to apologize for Islam. But I will tell you, we're different than the West. We do things differently. We have our own system. It's superior to everything that's out there. So now, what does Islam say? One of the things that we're advised is that for our men, we're supposed to have what is known as al-ghayra. We'll call it protective jealousy. Protective jealousy. That men are supposed to have ghayra. They're not supposed to be indifferent when it comes to women who are involved with them in their lives. This is the complete opposite of the West, though. In the West, women are encouraged to be jealous over their husbands, and liberated men, they'll let their wives shake hands, they'll go to a party, she'll dance with other people. He's liberated, he's enlightened, he's not backwards. But for Muslim men, we're old school, we have different values. We don't think that's right for a man to be like that. Hadith now, that the iman of a man is his ghayrat. The iman, ghayrat, sorry, the hadith is like this from Amir al-Mu'mineen. The ghayrat of rajul iman. When a man has that protective jealousy, we'll get to what people go to extremes too, you know, honor killings and all kind of other crazy stuff. We'll get to that. But just to have that, because what happens is that because we are so bombarded by the West, sometimes Muslim men feel ashamed to have ghayrat, to be protective over their wives and daughters. Muslim men feel ashamed because, no, I'm liberated, I'm honest, I'm a good person. You know, I remember one thing I heard from a brother who was like, a hard man is good to have. A hard man is good. Be different. Be strong. One thing in Islam that you'll find is that Muslim men are strong. They're leaders of their families. They're in charge. Right? But at the same time, they're humble. The leader of a group of people is a servant of those people. So you're a servant. You'll die for them, but you're also in charge of them. And you're supposed to have that ghayrat. So now, just a couple of hadith about ghayrat, just to hammer the point home. The Prophet of Allah said that my father Ibrahim was ghayur, and I have more ghayrat than him. There was a time when there was a team of terrorists who were sent to execute, in our terminology, a hit team, sent to execute the Prophet of Allah. The Prophet of Allah had these guys executed, and he freed one of them. The guy said, why is it that I've been freed? He said that Jibreel informed me that there are five traits that you have which are beloved by Allah and His Messenger. The first one was al-ghayrat al-shadida ala haramik, that you have this protective jealousy when it comes to your family. It's different than the West, though. It's different than the West. Okay, so again, we're saying balance, though. We're saying balance. We're not saying be suspicious of our wives. Be suspicious of our husbands. Right? We don't do, where the ulama, when they give us advice, this is from Ayatollah Khamenei, says don't do anything to provoke your spouse's jealousy when you get married. Don't do anything to provoke their jealousy. Don't become a suspicious person. Sometimes bad feelings might come into our heart. We're told not to act on that, though. We can't control the feeling might come in, but so it's not about suspicion. That will destroy a marriage. But being protective, yes. We're told that that'll lead a good woman astray if a man has ghayrat in a place where he shouldn't have ghayrat. You know, that's one. The other one is accusations that people make. Oh, you were looking at this person, you were talking. That is tuhma. You don't want to do that. The other one is that balance which is supposed to be there. There is no ghayra in the halal. I'll give you an example. Once I was with some young brothers. So these brothers were all looking to get married. I'm like, brothers, you know, it's time to get married. You young guys, go ahead, get married. They're like, oh, there's no sisters. Oh, there's no sisters. Well, don't you guys all have sisters? No, bro. I'll get upset. The idea of me introducing my sister to another brother to get married, well, that's against my dad. No, we have laid that in the wrong places. When it comes to marriage, you know, that's perfectly okay. Set people up, hope one another, that's okay. That's not ghayrat in that place. My sister can't talk to anybody. My daughter can't marry anybody. No. The rules and laws of Islam based on that. Okay? So we want to do that. The other thing that, so one thing was that ghayrat. Why? Because we're told in hadith that if you look inappropriately at others, it'll happen to your women too. You have in hadith, the person who has ghayrat, a man who has ghayrat, will never commit zina. Don't even want to go near it. Because I can't stand it. I have protective jealousy over my own. How could I be that I would be doing this? One quick note though. With women, we're not telling them to have ghayrat though. Hadith state that ghayrat for a woman is kufr. So we're not telling the women to be protective and checking over their husbands. We're not telling husbands to abuse that either. But at the same time, this is a trait that men are supposed to have. So that's one. The other one was that we have to encourage people to marry. Young marriage, early marriage. If we want to have this trait of being able to be safe from the haram, we have to go and get married. And then when we do get married, we have to encourage our wives to dress up and to look good. We're saying that it's natural for women to want to be beautiful. That's natural. It's in hadith. It says that التبرج لهن لازم. Even if a woman gets old, instinctively she needs to be beautiful and be appreciated. And if this is done properly, this will bring the husband and wife closer to each other. So we encourage women after marriage, because statistically across the board, normally what happens is that after marriage, women let their appearance go. Muslim or non-Muslim. You'd be surprised. You think, well, this person is a non-Muslim. They don't have any shame. But ask them. I was talking to some non-Muslims that come to the Islamic Center. I was in there speaking, so I was saying, yes, we say that outside the house, chastity, inside the house, dress up and look good. The woman said, that's exactly the opposite of what we do. In the house, you sisters aren't married yet, but in the house, baggy t-shirts, sweatpants, undone hair. But outside, dynamite. The exact opposite of what Allah and His Messenger want. So we say that actually inside the house it should be like that. More than that, exercise after marriage. Exercise after marriage. You know, women, our sisters, need to stay toned, look good, inside the house. No shame in that. Look good. We have hadith for everybody. For everybody should be exercising. Nigel Khamenei was saying that for men, women, older people, everybody, as my dad used to say, la-di-da-di, everybody out there, exercise. So we all need to be exercising, especially after marriage. And for brothers who are married, make a way that the sisters can have some time off from the kids, whatever, a little time, do a little exercise routine during the day, little aerobics or whatever. Stay toned. You'll be happy. She'll be happy. Okay. Now, after that, we also say dressing up. That's another difference between us and the West. We say that women should and must dress up after marriage. Go to some fatwas. If a woman, there's something about her appearance, their husband doesn't like, she has to change that. That need for her to be beautiful, because women have that need, that needs to be expressed in an appropriate way. That need for a man to look at a beautiful woman, that needs to be an appropriate way. Shaitan comes in, Muslim and non-Muslim. I'm not in the Islamic Republic of Iran. Men complaining, saying that my wife will go out to a majlis for ladies. She'll get dressed up, dynamite, hijab, everything, go out to the ladies' majlis, come back from the ladies' majlis, take off her makeup, take off everything, get back in the house clothes. So when I see her, she looks like mom. How is it that this happens?
Shaitan. Ridiculous. Inside the house, gorgeous, dressed up, looking good. You know that this principle is so important, it can save a marriage which is on the rocks.
I'll give you an example. This hadith now, that from Imam Sadiq, he's explaining that a divorced woman who's still in her period, her waiting period, and a divorce which has, it has what they call the rujul in it, they can still come back to one another. During this period, how should the woman behave? Because you know, what another mistake we make, when you look in the books of fiqh, you're not supposed to put the woman out of the house. She's supposed to stay there. You don't kick her out during that waiting period. Let her stay inside the house. Now what she's supposed to do, hadith now, that she is supposed to put on what they call kohl, right? Nowadays it would be like mascara. Kohl is something people put under the eyes. I don't know what you call it as well in your own language. Kohl. She's supposed to wear perfume, right? Wear her best perfume, right? Wear whatever she wants to wear and present herself to her husband. So she's just strutting back and forth in the house, just looking gorgeous. Don't do anything to me, honey. I'm just gorgeous. Walking all around. And just see if this man can resist her for the period of the iddah. The hadith says, perhaps, even at that stage in the marriage, if she applies this principle, it can save the marriage, and the husband will fall in love with her again. They've already gotten a divorce, waiting period. So imagine if there was a Muslim sister who said, well, actually, I'll adopt this principle. I'll always do this throughout the marriage. Every day, dynamite. Every day, gorgeous. You know how happy the husband would be? You know, and again, I'm going to say something, brothers, on behalf of you guys, so that you guys will forgive me. You know, sisters, men are simple. They're not stupid, but men are simple. For a man, it is so important to have his wife looking good. You know, we have a hadith that says that, the Prophet of Allah talking to women, he says, I see no group who can rob a man of his intellect like you guys. And women know this. They know if they want to charm their husband or any other man, instinctively, what do they have to do? Right? What happens is sometimes we speak firmly inside the house. Yes, husband, are you home now? Yes. Right? But we know how to be charming and friendly. There's someone, women who practically purr when they speak. So friendly and smart. And for a man, you know, you don't even, I don't want to hold a conversation with this sister. Get off the phone. Right? So women know how to do. What happens, Shaitan will have us use that outside. But then inside the house, just like, you know, one of these, you know, John Wayne or, you know, Bruce Lee, you know, something like that, you come home, you know. Some of these sisters, they shout at their husband, and you think that the husband is a little child. I told you to get that done! Well, we should be, you know, soft, friendly, polite. So, we should be doing that. So, dressing up. Now, another thing that's important is for our brothers to realize. We're saying that for our sisters, it's very important for them to dress up. We have hadith that say that the best of your women, no, not the best of your women, the right of the wife over your, the husband over the wife, is that she wear the best of her clothes, the best of her jewelry, the best of her perfume, and present herself for her husband morning and evening. Just walking back and forth, looking good. Every day, all the time. So now, one of the things for brothers now, is that we need to give compliments. Sometimes women don't feel in the home, they don't get the compliments from their husband. There was a statistic done, around 77% of women said that they felt in a deep emotional need to hear from their husband that he felt she was beautiful. Not the rest of the world, in his eyes. They said that if it was under 35, it was 84% of women felt this need. To be beautiful, that their husband appreciated them. So, for our husbands, for the brothers, let me give you a verse of Quran, right? Surah 5 and verse number 2. Ta'awanu ala al-birri wa taqwa. Assist one another in righteousness and taqwa. Your wife is trying to do her duty to Allah. The least you can do is give her a couple of compliments, make her feel appreciated, make her feel that she is it. So a couple of points now about complimenting. The first thing, make sure you compliment right away. You know, the wife comes in, she's dressed up, she looks good. You know, you don't say anything. Like, you know, gets a little deflated after that. So as soon as she comes in, you notice. Allahu Akbar, what'd you do tonight? Well, Next, don't ever tell your wife that she's, you know, she asks you, how do I look? You know, fine. Don't say fine. Or don't say anything, but say anything. Wants to know that she's rocking your world, okay? So you gotta let her know. Secondly, try and live separately from your parents. Separately from your parents. What I'm saying, and it's not that we're gonna be Westerners and put our parents in old folks' homes and, no, we're not, no, no. We're Muslims. We take care, we respect, we love, we have reverence for our parents. But a lot of times if we live all in one place, it's hard for us to observe everybody's rights. One of those rights is that the wife needs to be beautiful. You know, but I've got my kid brother there. How can she dress up? My father's there. She's not going to be able to, you know, wear a little mini skirts or a high heel. How she can do that in front of these guys? But if we live separately, so live separately. If you have children, you got to put your children to bed early. Don't have a, you know, we all crash at 12 o'clock midnight. No, let the kids go to bed. And I'm just trying to make it practical, right? Let the kids go to bed at, you know, I don't know, 10 o'clock, something like that. Then from 10 to 11, she can wear her nice stuff. And then she can wear, you know, her really nice stuff later. But let her dress up every day so she, because what happens, Muslim women don't have a chance to express this side of themselves, so they need that. For brothers, shop with your wives. Buy your wives the clothes you'd like to see them wearing. And another problem we have is that even when a man sometimes buys clothes for his wife that he wants to see her wearing, the wife won't wear this. Shaitan. I'm not going to wear that. So he goes on and makes effort, so he's not very encouraged. Right? But, you know, women normally, they spend a lot of time on their appearance, how they look, making sure, you know, all these different things. But they don't take their husband's views into consideration. They should dress according to his taste, make themselves look beautiful for him, and the husband should be buying them. So, one last point, and that is, and again, this is from Hadith now, that also when it comes to the intimate relationship in a marriage, even then, and I'll just keep it very briefly, but this is one of, again, those issues that causes friction in a marriage and destroys marriages. You see, from an Islamic point of view, we encourage that outside, we are chaste, we are separate, we don't play, we don't have friends, we're not emailing, you know, we're just brothers and sisters, we're not doing all of that, but then inside the house, it's a completely different story. So the hadiths say that the best of your women are the women who are chaste and lusty. Chaste and lusty, best of your women. Islam wants to see that balance. When we want to do the self-building, one of the reasons we don't succeed is that we don't take care of these things which Islam wants us to do. So now, and this is another big problem after marriage, and when it involves the intimate relationship, and normally what happens in the West is that the women will tell their husbands no. I'll just be frank with you guys. They tell the husbands, no, I'm not ready, it's not in the mood, these things. And Islamically, that's forbidden. There's fatwa now. The fatwa is that, this is from Imam Khomeini, you can look in the Risalas or the other maraqid, it's similar. That a woman must give her husband every sexual pleasure that he wants and not prevent him from having intercourse with her. Fatwa, or a permanent wife. So what happens is that normally this is the issue in marriage. They are not happy, and then you see all kinds of fights and issues in other areas. So for us, if we want to practically overcome this, one was ghayda, the other was getting married early, then observing the rights of the spouse, and those two that I mentioned. So I end that, inshallah, we ask that Allah accept what was said and heard in His way, that He make us the true soldiers of the Imam of our time, that He forgive and protect the believers, the Maraja, and especially the leader, Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Salawat.
I'd like to thank the Sheikh for that very relevant and inspiring talk, I'm sure, to most of the attendees. I know most guys would not like to admit it, but I'm sure that was a very useful talk and very practical related. And I think we're all in need of it, male and female, in this holy month where we have to train ourselves and particularly our self-discipline. It's coming up to iftar time, so just a few pointers, inshallah. Unfortunately, due to traffic and arriving starting late, we won't have time for questions as we would usually do. These IOS iftars over the 4 weeks and general IOS activities are run totally by donations and subscriptions, i.e. it's an independent organization by the youth and for the youth. So if, I'm sure you're all aware of the immense reward of donating for iftars and helping to break the fast of your brothers and sisters. So feel free to talk to myself or any of the IOS volunteers over dinner or after Salah, inshallah. Also, at the back of the schools, you can sign up as IOS members, have a look at the magazine. Currently the only Shia youth magazine in the UK by the IOS. I believe Sheikh Osama will also be talking at the Muhammadi Trust on Friday, Saturday and Sunday in a series called Ahl al-Dunya. So that starts at 7 p.m. I believe. And I'm sure there's plenty of lessons and tips and laughs as well, inshallah. Other events as well on Friday, an event for the brothers downstairs, the Friday Night Project, between a few different youth organizations. The debate this Friday is about foul language in Islam and its acceptability in this society and its status in Islam. Again, that will be with iftar as well at 7 p.m. This series of IOS iftar, inshallah, carries on next week. Inshallah, we can start at 7 p.m. sharp, as intended. Brother Muhammad Fendi will be giving a talk, inshallah, and then iftar as usual. And I think that summarizes everything. We've got a few minutes till iftar, so unless there's anything else.
Just one thing. I don't leave everybody in ambiguity. We're not saying, obviously, that it is forbidden to talk to the opposite sex. I don't want to leave you with that impression. Because now I'm aware of the hadith, the month of Ramadan, so now what does Islam want me to do? Basically, when it comes to looking at the opposite sex, I'll quote the fatwa of al-Sistani and the other margin, there's somewhat similar, but I'll quote the fatwa of al-Sistani. He says that when it comes to a woman who does not wear hijab and will not wear hijab if you tell her to. So we're talking about the non-Muslims, they're not going to wear hijab. Or a Muslim sister who does not wear hijab, and if you say, please sister, you're supposed to be wearing hijab, then what is the rule? For this person, you're allowed to look at what they normally expose without lust or fear of falling in sin. So you go to a workplace, your co-workers are there, without lust or fear of falling in sin, those areas which are normally exposed, you're allowed to look at. That's one. The other thing with talking, we're not allowed to talk with lust or fear of falling in sin. However, normal conversation is okay. We're just encouraging that conversation that is unnecessary. We don't have to have this conversation. We're just socializing. We're being buddies. We're sharing that kind of thing. We're trying to avoid, from an akhlaqi point of view, to keep ourselves from getting in trouble. So just to clarify that.